This is
October the 14th and the morning lecture. This morning I want to go into something very interesting, which I hope you will find it's very interesting, and has to do with the lag of the mass universe, the lag index. When we speak of communications in Scientology, we are speaking of the transfer of a particle or a motion from one part of a space to another part of a space, or from one space to another space. That's all we mean by communication. That's the reductio ad absurdum definition of communication. We have a pencil at one corner of the desk and we move the pencil to the other corner of the desk. That's communication. Because why? Because one corner of the desk is now communicated with the other corner of the desk. That's a reductio ad absurdum of communication definition. If you understand how absurdly simple its definition is, you'll understand all about communications. Communication doesn't have anything to do with one corner of the desk demonstrating the volition which moves the pencil to the other corner of the desk. We're not interested then in the volition if we're interested in communication. If there's going to be any motion, at some time or another, somebody at least set up some form of automaticity which resulted in an arrangement whereby you got a communication point from one point to another point. An anchor point, which severely defines, is not in motion. That's theoretical. But theoretically, and for our purposes, so far as practical considerations are concerned, the corner of this room up here is not in motion. You see, that's a practical consideration. But your glance between one corner of this room and over to the other corner of this room is your communication with two corners of the room, or the communication of one corner of the room with the other corner of the room. Follow this. What corner of the room is the source, and the other corner of the room is the receive point of a what? Of an attention. So there's been communications between the two corners of the room. Didn't require any volition on the part of either corner of the room. But there is always volition involved wherever you look in this universe. Whether the volition was a long time ago or right now, or whether or not it runs on an automaticity or not, this is beside the point. Any automaticity has a causation of one sort or another. And the causation is no different than the. It's not just even the same order of beings. It's the. And your level of communication then between these two corners of the room does have a double. If you said there is a communication between one corner of the room and the other corner of the room, and you have not made a communication or dispatched a particle or given an intent between these two corners of the room, you still have the prime mover unmoved causation, even though it is now running on an automaticity. You get the idea. Any interchange then is a communication. But we don't have to have the second corner of the room replying to the first corner of the room to complete a communication. We don't have to have any meaning or reason in the communication. So let's just sort out this whole thing of communication, because it's obvious that the wordiest, most wonderful letter which you ever received in your life just had reasons all through it, actually had no reason at all in it. The circuit case asks you consistently and continually, why did God make this universe? Why was the cause of this universe? Why was it made? Well, we're coming close enough to it when we say cause and effect and attention. Why? Because these things are observable. These are terrifically observable. Does there have to be a reason for attention? No. There doesn't have to be any reason of any kind at all for attention of any kind.
Now, if you don't think this is true, did you ever hear of false arrest? Of course, the reason in there for the arrest is the fact that somebody has made a mistake. But actually, when we talk about an arrest, what is the reason behind an arrest? It is the impulse of life to duplicate and copy, and it is the police impulse, reductio ad absurdum, of life, imitating the messed universe, having to stop something. That's all. There's reason behind it. Yes, stop. So we're very up close to the surface on reasons when we go into things like start, stop, and change. And when we say, what is the purpose behind all this? Well, you just can say communication and you're all set. And this might sound very wise, and a circuit case can go off and figure, and he'll come up with a right answer, which is the fact that it's communication, even within his definition. A religionist can come in on this, and he can say suddenly, why, yes, well, how wise, that's true. Because you see, it was set up so that God could communicate with each and every one of us. Isn't that wonderful? And he can play beautiful sadness and sweetness and light on this, and he's quite happy with it. The truth of the matter is, there's not this much reason in it. I don't think God wants to communicate with anybody myself. I'm some people I know, so forth. I know some of the things I have to say. I don't think he'd want to communicate with me. I know an awful lot of people that, boy, he'd run if he thought he had to communicate with them. So, you see, it's in essence simply an interchange. And it's quite a trick to have any space at all. And it works out very nicely for anyone if you simply explain it to them on terms of communication. But remember what communication is. Communication, reductio ad absurdum. There is some attention in any piece of mist. It might have been, the mist might be representing an automaticity. You see, it may have been attention set up to run. By the way, a wonderful button is setting up something to keep on going without attention. You can double terminal that damn thing and you'll find yourself being cursed more often and so forth. The fellow who set up this universe to run this way actually wasn't a fellow. You want the universe to run this way, more or less. Because it's a good test of randomity. It makes lots of randomity. Man versus the universe. It's a good fight. A beautiful button in this universe is, I have to have enemies. I must have enemies. You see a lot of these people running around, hate. They're just saying, I must have enemies. They've got to have them. They'll make them any way, shape, or form. Well, now, that, very high on the scale, is I must have randomity. I have to have something to interchange against what I'm putting out to interchange with. See, you have this problem. If you get no motion without randomity, simply moving a particle from one corner of a space to the other corner of the space is not in itself randomity. It just is moving from one corner to the other. I'd be very happy if all we did was move a little particle from one corner to the other corner and then move it back again and move it around into another space and then move it back again and move it around and move it back and shove it around here and there. Sometime, if you want to have a good time and understand what I'm talking about, find a pool table or just take your desk and take a match. And as you sit there over the pool table or over your desk with a match, just move the match from one corner of the desk to the other corner of the desk, and then move it to another corner, and then move it to the center, and just go on with that for a while. I'm serious. You really ought to make the test so that you get the emotion. There is actually a reaction to doing that. It's always best not to predict a result, but I say you ought to satisfy yourself about this. But you think you know what boredom is. Well, do this for 2 hours. Just force yourself to do it for 2 hours. Of course, it's not quite fair because you have a reason for doing it. Well, let me assure you that if you had two matches or two pool balls, which is much better, why I introduced the pool table in the first place, you can actually spend a lot of time with two pool balls, making one go around and hit the edges of the thing and bank and hit the other pool ball and billiard on it and so forth. You put three pool balls in, or three billiard balls, and you've got the fascinating game of billiards. And even if you just use your hand and you just kick the ball around and it hit the other two balls and so forth, there's nice satisfying click click, and they roll in various directions, and when you hit one, it rolls off at an angle. Never goes away exactly straight. You got your first definition of randomity. People have trouble understanding randomity. And this is the series of experiments which you make to demonstrate randomity. Your first randomity is with two particles. Now you can take one pool ball and throw it around the banks, but then immediately every time it touches one of the banks, you have to realize that at that point it was touching another particle. To get any other action, it isn't an automatic characteristic of space. You wouldn't just throw a pool ball around inside a space, it would just fly out of the space which you had demarked if you weren't to, because it would just go on making more space, because the second it as a particle moved outside the plane of any of the four particles on the side, you would have a fifth particle and you'd have more space. It would become an anchor point for that space. And it would just make more space. This, by the way, is a basic game, making more space with one particle. You can make various shapes of space and so on. It becomes very interesting. All right. Basic space, by the way, I've called to your attention, four particles, not eight. Giving you three sides. One, two, three, four triangles is the basic space rather than four squares. You just take this match and you move it from one corner to the other to the desk and you will eventually get bored. Why do you get bored? Because you can predict exactly where it's going. Now you take two matches and by moving one against the other, you don't have enough to make much of a pattern. You can make a T or an L, but you don't have much to make a pattern with, and they're not mobile. But with two pool balls, you've gotten your first step of unpredictability. No predict. In other words, to have interest, you must have a condition whereby there is a no hyphen prediction condition. Instead of getting mad at this universe, let's look at that. No hyphen prediction is a very definite necessity in the field of interest. Now, putting it this way, we've got it in terms of motion rather than in terms of thought. Putting it this way, in terms of motion rather than in terms of thought. And if you just think about this, this is obvious, and you can philosophize on this, which is to say, just think about it and so forth. But if you set these things up in terms of motion, they become immediately visible. Now, why do two pool balls form a no predict? That's because when you slam one pool ball against the other pool ball, it'll chrome off slightly. But you can get pretty bored just throwing one pool ball against another pool ball. What you need is two pool balls. Two pool balls to throw one pool ball against. And these three pool balls, then, will get into a situation where the new pool ball will itself interact all by itself against the second pool ball when either or the other is hit with the first pool ball. There's a possibility of an interaction. And that's your first automaticity. The first automaticity takes place, then, on a higher no-predict. In order to have interest, we must have a no predict. All right. What then are the conditions of interest? The conditions of interest are no predict. and enough particles communicating one with the other, which is to say hitting and clipping and going the other way, to form an automaticity. This is, I'm sorry that these two things which we condemn so hard are the first and second levels of interest. You see how that would be. You've got no predict and then you've got automaticity. You wonder why your preclear is bored sometimes. Why he doesn't want any processing up above a certain point. He gets scared. He's afraid you're going to take away from him his no predict. And you're going to take away from him his conditions of automaticity. The only thing wrong is with him is that he himself has become a particle. And he has no volition. He doesn't have hold of one of those pool balls. He isn't objecting to the numerous other pool balls on the table. All he's objecting to is the fact that he doesn't have a chance to bat one of the pool balls. When he doesn't have a chance to bat one of the pool balls, then he is the effect of all of the no predict and all the automaticity with which he's surrounded. And when he is the effect of the no predict and the automaticity around, he becomes very, very unhappy. He can tell you various reasons why he's unhappy. I'm telling you the highest echelon you get. It's just it's utterly impossible for him to predict anything. And all the automaticity can use him for an effect. Well, if this is the case, then he is in a perilous situation, he considers. But the main peril is that he's not interested. That's really the only peril. So there is a what we might call a critical point on a case or any case. And this critical point is that point at which the preclear considers, you've got level of tolerance of randomity, it's in the axioms. Look it up in the axioms there. Everybody has a level of tolerance of randomity. Randomity is the introduction of no predict and automaticity into the motions of particles in a space, or in many spaces. See? It's the simplicity itself. Now his tolerance is merely his consideration. Now you'll find men are postulating the weirdest kind of an impossible situation with regard to randomity and no predict. They say, I want to get a farm with some orange groves and sit down and just let the oranges grow, and that'll be all I have to do. Oh, no. Nunca. Those oranges are being put out automatically by the trees. And there's probably not going to be enough wind around to even bother him. His goal is to do that, but he would be very, very upset indeed if there weren't a few worms, if there wasn't a little wind, if there wasn't a drought and a fight with the irrigation company. You see, these things have to be. If they aren't, you go. But if he gets to a point where the irrigation company is always right, and the worms are always victorious, he is immediately in a situation where we have him, the effect of the no predict and the automaticity. Now you see that? So what's the criteria here? He doesn't want too much self-determinism, which is to say, self-determinism is the right to push one of the balls that will interact amongst the other billiard. That's all. That's self-determinism. That's the right to throw this billiard ball into the midst of other billiard balls, or at least when a billiard ball is rolling along, to alter its direction slightly. But to predict you're going to alter its direction, and which way? Now, if you depend exclusively
upon the meshed universe to gain that effect for you, you have again entered an automaticity which is too great. You say that a rifle bullet coming in through the window and hitting a cotton bale here will stop. And it'll stop exactly so many umphumps deep into the cotton bale. And it will stop at a certain heat, and you know all this, and already there's the cotton bale sitting there, and you don't pull the trigger on the rifle bullet, and just you know any rifle bullet that comes in through that window is going to hit. You better not automaticity in. Real heavy. There's nothing ever going to go wrong with that cotton bale. It's just sitting there. You, by the way, I'm sure, would not sit there for many hours, many days, many years, looking at that cotton bale. It won't hold your interest because the meshed universe itself, by a basic law inherent in the universe, is doing your stopping for you. And it's always going to stop the bullets, and it's always going to stop in exactly that fashion. You know this will keep on happening forever. And this is real dull, isn't it? Real dull. Not interesting. You're up against, again, a no difficulty in predicting. You're up against the other thing, a complete predict. So a complete predict and a complete automaticity, or a no automaticity and a no predict, are amongst them all undesirable. So let's get these things arranged better. No predict goes with automaticity, which is working against one, and complete predict, working with no automaticity, make setups. And you work these things around, you push these factors around into various shapes, and you can get a tremendous number of answers. In fact, you can get all the answers there are. You must have the right to put out and stop the particle or change its course, change the course of particles. You must have the right to do that. And you must also have the right not to have it do that all the time. When the meshed universe really gets pinned down and one of these super machine age societies is really rolling, boy, it has taken away from you your inheritance from God himself. You're surrounded by full automaticity. You know, after you get a house fully automatic, oh, but fully automatic, and automatic everything. It does all the heating, and it does the water softening, and it does the air conditioning, and it does the cooking and the washing of the dishes, and it does all of these things automatically. It draws your bath, and pulls down the sheet. It doesn't even pull down the sheets. It just turns on the thermostat exactly right in the blankets. Oh, boy. You got this house all set, and then you put somebody to live in there. Will you please ask me why? Why don't you just make a doll then that is automatically running continually and forever and just have the doll in the house and then go off someplace with the satisfaction that you've put together a fully automatic arrangement which fully automatically takes care of a fully automatic being and you've done it and you're no longer interested in it. I think God left some time back. He just shoved off. He couldn't take it. This universe is really in a beautifully automatic condition. So when you get too much automaticity, too much prediction, your interest alike fails. When you get a complete no predict and no automaticity, you fail. See? See what aberration is. Aberration would be complete no predict on some subject, in some place of the case. Complete no predict. and no automaticity. See why that would be two things wrong with the case then. The case had everything all nailed down so beautifully, so gorgeously, that there was nothing else to be done for it or about it. Or, on the other side, had everything beginning. Because if nothing is automatic for him, he has no opponent. Or he has to do it all himself, which is the same thing. And if it's a complete no predict, he can never tell which way anything is going, or even begins to approach the theoretical absolute of never tell which way something is going. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, this is a real, real dumb deal. So, what's our problem, Mr. Anthony? The problem's a very simple one. Any case that is in trouble is somewhere out of the area of what he considers optimum randomity for him. You can't tell exactly what optimum randomity is for a case, because it will vary from case to case. That, fortunately, is a variable. It's really the one variable in the problem. I guess it's real grim to have just this. So, what would you do? What would be your basic theoretical therapy? Basic theoretical therapy is just merely to change the level of randomity. Okay. Giving more or less automaticity, more or less prediction than he now has. I think probably the sickest person you would ever meet is one who had a total prediction. That would be the sickest person you'd ever run into, and yet you don't think of that. Ordinarily, as we process here, you don't think of that as being an undesirable state, because we're all below the level. We're too close to no predict. We're closer to no predict than we are to complete predict.
It has to be a level of total predict for the additional postulate. There's only one universe predicted.
That's right, of course. But what you've got to do, in any case, is take a look at it. If you're looking for basic aberration, just take a look at it and size it up to this degree. For God's sakes, that is why people in Dianetics and Scientology are actually lousy preclears. You should understand that instantly. They're just terrible preachers. For all the damning and howling, which I do occasionally about auditors and auditing and so forth, we're not up against a tough problem here. That damning and howling is just adding some randomity into the picture. It becomes very obvious why then a case which is deeply interested in the problems, epistemology. One person in Dianetics and Scientology will be tremendously interested in epistemology. He's just thinking too hard about knowledge and so forth. But actually, boy, he really gets revved up just on the subject of thinking. It in itself is a randomity. He's thinking about it without looking at it. All he'd have to do is look at it. And gee whiz, if he just looked at it, it'd blow up on him as an epistemological problem. Just to kind of keep from looking at it. He's using his preclears and himself for basic randomity. There's absolutely no reason why he shouldn't. See? He should. But he makes a lousy preclear because he immediately starts playing a game with his attitude. He knows the answers, and so he's, although he's below optimum randomity, you can't be in Dianetics and Scientology very long, or even get audited very long in a coffee shop auditors. Even those today can do such things as take away these cruel and punishing chronic somatics. They can. They blow up. So nobody who is really working with the field is in any real trouble. Not today. That was true 2 or 3 years ago. But not now. They're not in any real trouble. Their real trouble is the fact that they have fixed upon and made a postulate about their future randomity. Their future randomity has to do with their own case and the case of those around them. They don't want these things solved. If you solve these things, you get a predict. You'll find every once in a while an auditor getting quite frightened at the idea of solving the case. He knows that he can get a complete predict. He could get a complete predict with a case. He wouldn't even consider it desirable or super desirable. Therefore, he has a tendency to go toward the cases that are in the most trouble, at least furnish the most randomity. Now, fortunately, we have a great big universe here, which in itself was set up to provide an enormous amount of randomity. And fortunately, you get somebody up into motion, the tolerance motion of this universe, and he can actually find it. High level of randomity. So let's realize that this condition of mind, that attacking the problem and attacking the case as a randomity in the field of Scientology, is intensely spurious. That's very bad. That's quite bad. Simply because there is so doggone much randomity available which is not yet perceived. Did you ever really get excited about organizing a party? Did you ever get real excited about, really, really violently excited about some terrific project or other in its original new stages? Did you ever get that feeling you can recall? Oh boy, zing, 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 zing. Well, optimum randomity for this universe is well above that point. Man is running way, 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 way below. The normal man is running so close to a no-predict, complete automaticity, a guinea, that he's having a hell of a time for himself. And every time these condemned societies build a little more automatic car, they seek to add to the happiness of all of us, you see. And gee, it just bogs somebody down a little further. He's got to have this car, and he's got to do all these things. It's very nice to free up all these hours for him, but as the Chinese said, he saved 2 minutes on the trip, but what did he do with them? The only thing he could do with these 2 minutes is simply get 2 minutes more of some other kind of randomity. When you wipe the whole society out, you got safety campaigns on every hand and side. When you have cops on every street corner, when you can't help anybody off, actually you don't even dare hit anybody in the society. Boy, they've just got it reduced down, and I guess they're trying to make a lot of new particles. Well, as near as you can figure. They just must be trying to make a lot of new particles which themselves could be pushed around. And that becomes very grim. By the way, it's no accident that there are less people in Scientology than there were in Dianetics. The less isn't very much, but it's there. It's because we're really pulling away from the level of motion of the rest of the society. We're pulling away from their level of tolerance. They've got an educated tolerance level. They know that cars should be driven really at 35 miles an hour. They feel comfortable at 35 miles an hour. They do not feel comfortable at 180. They're not at all comfortable. And yet randomity for an automobile would be about 110. That's good randomity. You're liable to hit anything. And you wouldn't quite predict which side of the road you would be on because of the structure of the automobiles to hand. You wouldn't be able to predict a lot of things about it. So you've entered a bunch of no predict. When you've got a car going down the road at 35 miles an hour, complete, new, good tires, excellent condition, nothing wrong with it, I'm afraid that you get into this straight out of boredom. In fact, drivers have been known to go to sleep at a wheel in such cars. What's got to do with communication? You want to change the communication level of your prefix, what you're trying to do. communication level is simply his ability to move particles or move as a particle from one part of space to another part of space. So it's basically motion, isn't it? You're trying to increase his motion. Well, if you can just move him from one part of space to the other part of space and demonstrate that he can do this and demonstrate it often and conclusively and convincingly to him, believe me, his level of motion and his level of communication are going to come up. The reason he doesn't move out of his head is because he's got too much no predict and too much automaticity. It's all being done for him. He has terrific dependencies on all sorts of things. He's got dependency on the body, he's got dependency on the mesh universe to hold out anchor points, he's got dependency on all kinds of things. Basically, he's got dependency on the mesh universe to hold out his anchor points for him. He doesn't have to hold out any anchor points. Fellows, by the way, cases will crack just on this. Do you know that you don't have to hold out all the anchor points there are around you? The fellow says, what are you talking about? You say, well, compare one arm of the chair with the other arm of the chair. You watch him, he'd be like a bird dog, like a pointer. Look at that chair, comparing one arm with the other arm. Then you move over to a bookcase and you say, compare one corner of the bookcase to the other corner of the bookcase. You look at that and you compare those two things. Now get the slight differences between them, you say. Take his attention off of that carefully. And they look over at the window and you compare one corner to the other. You take his attention off that a little less carefully. And you look back at these things every once in a while. Well, you'll get cases at this level. You want to know what you're looking at. That guy thinks that he is holding apart these two corners himself. He doesn't realize that it will be done for him. He's got his own universe and the mesh universe completely coincided, you see. Too much so that he still thinks he's in his own universe, or has to be. And he hasn't differentiated between his own universe and the mesh universe. Well, how do you get this differentiation across? Very indirectly. He finds out, all of a sudden, usually, and then the process, by the way, becomes useless when he's completely convinced of this, that that corner of that desk and that corner of that desk are table are going to remain apart whether he puts his attention on them or not. Those two particles are going to stay in position. In other words, you are showing him that the mesh universe is nailed down and that space is made that way and that the space will stay space. He isn't sure that the mesh universe won't collapse. We've gotten to that point. Now let's look at communication lag, and let's look at this very carefully. Your case, which is in a level of be a body, has bought large quantities of automaticity. Everything is being done for him through the body, emotions being made for him, and everything is being done for the body by automatic gimmicks out through the society. See, we've got this automaticity set up. But we have factors around him whereby he is educated to believe everything should be ethical and good and sweet and noble. The school does a good job on this. I mean, and the fiction of the country, a writer can't sell reality. He can't sell this universe. He's got to sell a terrifically fictionized version. The stories in Collier's magazine compare with when Nightwood was in flower. Real sweet. It's all real sweet. Heroes are heroes, and they're honest and they're noble, and the women are usually, they've become less so in fiction lately, but they're usually virgins. And so on. I mean, it's got no bearing on reality at all. We take this kid who was super educated by the movies, by fiction, and particularly by school, which taught him he must be honest, he must be kind, he must be merciful, he must be all these things, he must be, you see, terrific restrictions, and not to be strong, and not to use force. That's what everybody's got, everything convinced with. You can't have any randomity before you use, unless you're willing to use force. What's force? Force is just the change of particle from one corner of the room to the other corner of the room, or one corner of the universe to another corner of the universe. That's what force is. You say to somebody, you mustn't use any force,
And by this you may mean one thing, but he interprets it the fact he must use strength. Just try and build a bridge sometime without using any force. Be an interesting thing. A fellow would walk a tightrope of thought from one corner of the chasm to the other corner of the chasm. The last time I saw anybody try to do this, he fell in. So the main difficulty we have then with your pre-clear is the fact he's got a no predict on this level. He can't tell what people are going to say to him or otherwise, because he's been sold first on certain conditions in the society which aren't true, and then having come out of that educational period is abruptly confronted with the fact that the universe runs some other way, and he's been taught in this fashion, and then he experiences in another fashion, and his education, being intensely artificial, does not then permit him to predict his fate. Therefore, you find fellows who leave school in the third grade and can't read, very often being fabulously successful in society and very happy and extremely sane. It isn't how much they've studied. It isn't how much time they've sat in a chair or in a schoolroom. It's just the fact that what they've been taught is false. This is another method of entering a no predict. You tell the fellow, well, the best way to be admired is to crawl around on the floor and say ga ga, boo boo boo, and be naked and don't control toilet activities. This is the way to be admired, obviously. And then you teach him that this is all frowned on. Well, that's what happens to every kid. He goes through these stages. All of a sudden they start toilet training and he finds out that's not good, that's not good, that's not admired. Education could be said to be a super evaluation of what will be admired. In other words, what will vanquish force? How do you get the force that's supposing you vanquished? See, it gets very simple as you look at it. Education enters a no predict by teaching a fellow one method of prediction and then letting him experience quite another series of randomities. Now, here's a better example of that. You take your billiard ball and you teach a fellow very carefully that all these billiard balls are resilient. They bounce, you know. And he throws his billiard ball down the billiard table and it hits the other billiard ball and it bounces and they go crack and they spring apart beautifully and ably, and they bank against good beautiful rubber cushions, you see, and they come back together again, crack, crack, and there's lots of motion. It's all so smooth, so nice. And then you say, now that we have trained you to do this, now you know all there is to know about that. Now there's your billiard table over there. And he goes over to his billiard table, and of course he finds one billiard ball is made out of cast lead, and the other two are made out of putty. And one bank of the table, one bank is made out of steel, and the other bank is made out of cotton. Now, the first time he throws that ball out there, something goes squash. He sinks into an apathy. You see how you do this. Now the funny part of it is, and this is why Hartman realized, if you had given him his own pool table in the first place and said, all right, this is your pool table, you're going to form randomity with this thing, why, he would have made these basic errors and he right away, without any experience, he would have said, that's the way a pool table acts. Putty, steel, you have to kind of watch out for it. Even if you fixed it up so that every other game or every few games where you switched the character of the banks and gave him two lead balls to hit and a putty ball to throw with, if you did this to him a few times, he would merely form the opinion that he was up against a situation which was altering and that there was a certain amount of no predict in it. But if you taught him that there is a complete predict, and then you lower the level of predict on him, even slightly, he has a tendency to drop down tone scale.
Actually, you could train somebody so that the pool balls would shift without warning in character, so that you could never tell which pool ball was going to be made out of putty, which one out of what, and which bank was going to be steel and which one was going to be cotton. And what do you know? He'd say, well, this is the way pool tables are. And he would establish it at his own level as the randomity which he would have to embrace. And he would go ahead and embrace the randomity because he hasn't been convinced. What he's convinced of now is, my God, is there an awful lot of randomity here. There's no automaticity. I have to do practically everything there is done on this table. After I've hit the putty ball, I have to reach down and put it back in shape. And so forth. There's no everything. There isn't an automatic resilience which brings it out into a sphere. It's the case of putty. You see how simple it gets when you take a good solid look at what randomity is. What prediction is, what education is. Now you take a fictionized society, and we know in this that all communists are bad. We know they're all bad. And then we send this guy to Russia. And we get a book of dull, surprised amazement, such as that written by the late Wendell Willkie, called One World. It startled him to find there was a similarity between Russians and Americans. And he completely missed all the finer points, merely because he'd been super-educated into the idea that Russians were beasts, you see, and Russians aren't quite beasts. So he just omits the aren't quite in their own civilization, and he goes all out on the other side of the fence of their saints. And so you, well, practically, they were just American businessmen handling their economics in some other fashion, if I remember it correctly. A commissar was just like anybody else that you'd find in a factory management position. Of course, he was under a little more pressure. If he didn't make the town run, if I remember the quote from many years ago, if he didn't make this town run well, turn in his quota, he'd be liquidated, which meant, according to Wilkie, well, he'd be fired or maybe shot, extremity. But he knew this was what would happen to him, and it was all routine, and just like in Keokuk, Iowa. You see, he was trying to do a predict on the Russian scene against his other level, but he had been told that you couldn't predict this, and he found out a level of comparison where he couldn't, so he was real proud, so that made the Russians good. Perfectly good line of logic, you see, except it doesn't happen to form a prediction level for anybody else. All right, what's this lead to then? Leads to the fact that unless you've torn up some of the convictions of your PC with regard to his ability to move and make move, you know, this live and let live, to hell with that, that's apathy. What we want is move and make move. Stop and make stop is the game the cops play, but it becomes a very dull game when nobody's moving. You know, playing cops and robbers is a very interesting game. Little kids play this game, but playing cop depends upon there being criminals. And if the cops get too thorough on the thing, it all becomes automatic. The fingerprints find the man, everything else, and the educational system prevents him from stepping out of line and so forth. And I'll bet you, you know, I bet you, I know cops quite well. I've sat around with cops and actually detected these long, drawn-out sighs on the subject of there ain't no crime. No crime. I've seen cops training to fight criminals, you see, and there are no criminals. There's a hell of a lot. It's like telling this guy that, boy, this either trains, you know, and by fiction, or they believe that there's nothing in that pool table you see there. They've got a pool ball which is intensely subjectable to pain, and they're going to throw this ball around against balls that are made out of prickly pear spines. And this is the life they're taught. Then they get to the pool table, see, and all they can find to hit is just empty space. And people have got them fighting nothing. There's no randomity there. Cops go kind of psycho. Because their efficiency has reduced their own level of randomity. They are still playing the game hard. That's what happens in any game. Somebody starts playing the game real hard to win. I don't care what you define win as. Win is just hitting a couple of the balls, see? And predicting them sometimes a little bit. That's winning. And so, pang, down goes the cop against the table of crime, and he simply swamps up all the other balls, and there's no balls on the table, which leaves him nothing to fight. He wins. He predicts them so well that he vanquishes them, and he gets better and better on his prediction. I think people who play expert pool must be terribly bored with the game. Willie Hoppe, when he shot that cue ball down into the pool, shot it down into the triangle of balls, and pocketed this one and that one and the other one and the other one, and always pocketed them and so forth. But, well, he would get some admiration for this, but if he were, that's introducing another factor for his interest. But as far as they were, well, if you were to put him all by himself in a house someplace with a pool table and he had nothing to do but that, his randomity comes about with showing somebody else how to do it, and then their tremendous amazement and his interest that they can't. That's his randomity, his exterior to the game. So, what are we trying to do with pre-clear? Well, look at the shape he's in. He's either in too damn much randomity for him. He's fighting on too many fronts in life. Or he's fighting on enough fronts. You process a juvenile delinquent, and you will know immediately that there's another kind of case. He isn't fighting on enough fronts. The guy's front, or opponent saturation point, has not been reached. And a person will get to a point where he will actually run around and be the opponent. He'll go around, he can't get anybody to fight him, so he'll go around and fight himself. He gets tremendously involved in it. In arguments, you'll see people doing this. This is not an uncommon manifestation. You're a dog, you're just no good. And the other fellow stands there and he says, monitoringly, you know, quite quietly, he says, well, really, we shouldn't get upset about this. So what, we can talk this over quietly. Oh, you say I'm raising my voice, do you? You get the trick. He didn't get enough bang back. He didn't get enough reaction, so he's real upset. Now, you've heard women do this around the house. Well, their level randomity is quite poor. They stay home, husband goes to work, house is kind of empty, they have to straighten up this house. It's the same house, you know. Always been the same house for the last 10 to 15 years. Same pieces get out of line, the same meals have to be gotten, the same butcher is bought from. And they get to a point after a while where they just do this. They've got to put randomity into life. They can't stand it. You will actually see pre-clears who are just practically going through their roof. They just can't take this little level of randomity. I've had pre-clears show up who wanted an engram run. Is anything wrong with them? No. They just wanted something else to fight. So you showed them this engram, they come up with another engram. What the hell with this? You run that engram, they come up with another engram. Boy, this is all right. They got randomity. Now you take somebody's imagination. It's when these factors get extreme that they become very important in the society, because a guy gets convinced. You take a lot of people down here in the insane asylum, they just started under this line of insufficient randomity, and then they just ran it into a hole. Now they've got, the Western Union has wires plugged into their brain so as to inform the government of what they're thinking, and there are people going to shoot them through the window any minute, and so on. They've just overdone the name of your thing. And they can no longer control this level. But what is the pitch there? The pitch is a complete mock-up of no predict. I would say offhand, their life became enormously predictable. Their life became too predictable. All right. Well, somebody's trained then. Somebody gets trained in one direction, and then life gives him another pool table. You'll find if you want to uproot the past lives all the way up and down the track, if you want to uproot the whole track on a pre-clear, you just work with this principle. And what is the principle? It's just shifting pool tables. Every time he turns around, somebody gives him a new pool table. I'll tell you, that's why space opera hangs up so fabulously in this completely dull society. I'll bet you no space opera was keyed in at all here 100 years ago. You could always go out west and get shot or shoot somebody or be run down by a bull elk. You could always get into trouble. Always. And the police, boy, were they inefficient. No telegraphs to amount to anything, and they have no fingerprint files. And Bertillon, I think, is about then, was just starting to struggle up with something, not a little bit later. Then you just shaved your head a little bit different and wore a different colored tie, and you go into the same police station that arrested you yesterday and say, I want a job as a cop, and they'd hire you. I mean, life, you could change your identity. Well, now this society has got it rigged so he can't. If a guy finds a no randometry situation in this society today, he is hung with it because he's hung with his identity. You can make a preacher just happy as can be by saying, now let's see, what restaurant do you go to regularly? Oh. What do your friends call you? Oh. Where do you live? Oh. Well, now I want you, one, patronize an entirely different restaurant. Or you say one at the same time. No. Patronize for 2 weeks a joint. Just a joint. And make your friends call you by another name. And move. Guy says, there's nothing wrong with the house I've got now. It's a beautiful house, and I have a lease on, so when you say move. That's what we're talking about in the first book. We said shift environment. That's the factors of shift environment. You change this level of randomity, you see, somewhere. There are two things that will be happening in that environment. Either we'll be being hit too hard and too often, or he won't be being hit enough. What's happening to your preclear? Well, you'd better adjudicate which one it is. It's an either or. It's quite important what I'm telling you. You better adjudicate which one it is. This guy during his life had too much. This guy during his life had too little. But past is not as important as present ever. So all the question you need ask is the pertinent ones. What are the real factors with which this person is surrounded? Psychology gets hung up on changing environment, things like that, merely because it doesn't resolve within itself this problem. Is it either or? Is it plus or minus randomity? Plus randomity, simply too much.